Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News, Dickinson College visiting professor, CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. We go to a London headline late in the day. Russian troops seize key town as Ukrainian forces are driven back. There's a photograph of what appear to be two Russian soldiers standing on top of a tower waving a Russian flag, claiming victory over this town called Sudzha. This is Kursk salient, and Sudzha is said to be the centerpiece of the Ukrainian forces in Kursk salient. There have been reports for now 2 or 3 days of an offensive underway launched by the Russians, including North Korean troops, against this Sudzha and the surrounding area. Why it's important is because it can be cut off and encircled from retreating to Ukrainian territory to the west. Jeff, a very good evening to you. None of this is confirmed. It's all fog of war. However, given that we've had it for several days now, what can we say of these matters? That Russia's boasting because of the negotiation, that Ukraine is in strategic retreat. They've done very well in Kursk salient since they first tried the ploy last year. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think we can say a couple of things. One is it's clear that the Russians are intensifying their counteroffensive in the Kursk salient that you described in an effort to eject the Ukrainians from this piece of Russian territory the Ukrainians initially occupied in August. Ukrainians have been trying to cling to at least a portion of this, which at one time was up to 500 square miles, but as a bargaining chip for any future negotiations. And now still control, I think, about 30 to 40% of the area that they initially occupies. This town of Sudzha, as you mentioned, is critical to controlling that particular piece of territory. That's where the Russians are putting their primary emphasis in terms of men, materiel, artillery, et cetera. At the same time, down in the Donbas region, the battlefields become relatively static. And in fact, in a few places, the Ukrainians have actually managed to claw back a few square kilometers of territory. The Russians, as you may recall, have been trying to take the town of Pokrovsk down in the Donbas region, but have failed to do so. They've been pushing on that for the last 3 or 4 months. At the same time, it appears the Russians also intensified almost immediately in the aftermath of the announcement of the suspension of U.S. intelligence sharing and military aid to expand its missile and drone attacks against Kyiv, and have been doing that for the last several days. And in response, the Ukrainians actually launched 300 drones against Moscow, inflicting some damage. A couple of people were, in fact, killed, and all the airports were closed for a period of time. So I think as the Russians are intensifying their efforts in Kursk, the Ukrainians are trying to demonstrate they can respond as well.
I look at the battlefield, and I think to myself, this battlefield is going to influence the negotiations in Saudi Arabia or wherever the next step is taken. So let's go to what we know. As of now, the Ukrainians are said to have first offered a ceasefire in the Black Sea area between no missiles and no drones. That was not accepted by the Americans, and therefore the ceasefire offer is now made for the whole battlefield. I'm presuming that this includes the Kursk salient. That's what we know now. There is no information that Russia has acceded to this offer of 30 days. What is your measure of the 30 days? What is it meant to achieve, Jeff?
Well, what it's meant to achieve is, first of all, a halt to the fighting, immediate discussion for the Ukrainians in particular, for the exchange of prisoners of war, detained civilians, and, of course, children. And so many people believe there's up to 25,000 Ukrainian children that have been forcibly transferred to Russia. And then set the stage for the beginning of actual negotiation to move from a ceasefire to an actual settlement. Part of the outline that the Secretary of State and the Ukrainian delegation presented calls for this to be 30 days to get those negotiations going. And then that 30 days could be extended relatively indefinitely as negotiations for a formal settlement then began. Now, obviously, I think on the Ukrainian side, they made major concessions by going to a full ceasefire as opposed to the partial one you described. Part of that, I think, is to, on the Ukrainian side, to put more pressure on Russia. All the pressure has been on Ukraine. Let's put pressure on Russia. And it was important. The Secretary of State said, you know, the ball now is in Russia's court to see if they're going to be cooperative or not.
The Kursk salient was meant to be a bargaining chip, and that might explain why the Russians are throwing troops into this helter-skelter right now. Achieving that bargaining chip was an important mission for Ukraine. Are they wise now to back off because it's not going to be involved in the ceasefire negotiation? Once you get a ceasefire, I don't see Kursk salient entering into it in the same fashion.
Yeah, you could be right. I mean, what the Ukrainians are probably going to be looking for now, if they think there is hope for a ceasefire, is moving to what they are in more defensible terrain. They may have to abrogate that as a bargaining chip for the negotiations, but look to where they can actually defend or improve their defenses. Because one thing will be the big question on both sides. What does the military do with those 30 days? And both sides have already complained that their opponents would try to give their troops a chance to rest, refit, and prepare for the next round. But on the Ukrainian side, they can also improve their defenses if, in fact, it falls apart and the Russians recommence offensive operations.
Let's talk about the negotiations, Jeff. There have been battlefields negotiations before that have dragged out for months, if not years. I believe they're still negotiating about Panmunjom in South Korea. Is your anticipation here that there will be no resolution of this negotiation? They'll get a ceasefire, and it will end, and nobody will be fighting, and they'll stand off and stare at each other. That is one example of what happened in Cyprus, for example. It also happened to a certain extent in Korea. The war has never ended.
Yeah, I think that's very likely to be the case, because a full resolution is almost impossible, since both sides of real main objectives are intractable. On the Ukrainian side, they want the Russians to fully pull back from the territory they've occupied to include Crimea. That would demand, frankly, probably an abrogation of the current government in Russia and Mr. Putin stepping down as president. I don't see him doing that anytime soon. On the other side, the Russian maximalist demands call for really the Zelensky government to go, neutralization of Ukraine, and massive limitations on the military. So some ceasefire in between that can freeze the situation as it is, end the fighting, and see if political conditions can change over time to move, hopefully, over time to a longer-term settlement is probably the best thing you can do. We've seen that in Cyprus, seen that in Panmunjom. You actually could say we saw that in Berlin during the Cold War. But adjustments were made and agreements were made between both sides in several of these places, which may have perceived to be technical at the time, but showed that the political climates were changing and therefore the conditions for the ceasefire could also reflect that.
The negotiations, what we know of them now, is that Mr. Zelensky has been invited back to the White House to sign the mineral deal. What is your measure of the mineral deal? Was that a confidence builder and it's now moot, or is that vital to what comes next?
Well, I think, unfortunately for the Ukrainians, it may be vital to what comes next in terms of at least having the possibility of American support in terms of military aid and intelligence aid. When those two things ended, as I said earlier, we saw an immediate almost uptick in the attacks by the Russians using missiles and drones. This is due to the abrogation of the intelligence sharing, because the Ukrainians then became much more blind in their ability to detect incoming Russian missiles, cruise missiles, drones, etc., and also for their ability to do long-range fires, making their defense of the Kursk salient, obviously, much more complicated. So now, I think the Ukrainians want to improve their relations with the United States to ensure that, put pressure on the Russians through that particular effort. But in many ways, it always seemed to me this particular agreement really was much more favorable to the United States. Mr. Trump argued this was really to pay the United States back for what it had done, not set the conditions for aid in the future. And so that needs to be ironed out for the Ukrainian side. And second of all, the big blow up, really, I think, in the White House came over 2 points Mr. Zelensky perhaps unelegantly was trying to make. And that was, in any agreement, there is no reason why you should trust Vladimir Putin. He's violated lots of ceasefires during the Minsk process, absent some kind of security guarantees that suggest some pain if, in fact, he does so. And so I think we'll hear more and more from Mr. Zelensky in that. But that may be muted in the near regard as Zelensky tries to patch up his relations with Mr. Trump.
I'm speaking with Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States. I'm speaking with Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired. He's also a veteran of NATO, and we're headed there next because there are big questions about when and if there's a resolution in Ukraine. What about NATO ever after? And what else is possible? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bashlett.